Thank you very much for coming. My name is Ohad Ben Cohen. Little introduction. I'm a Linux kernel developer. The past few years I've been working as a consultant doing Linux kernel and Linux embedded projects. But today I'm going to talk about Corset, which is a security research project I've been working on together with Avishai Wool in Tel Aviv University. I'll be talking about why do we think this Corset is useful, what problem does it really aim to solve, how is it implemented. I promise a demo along the way, and we'll finish with some performance evaluation. So let's get started. Let's take a look at the following code snippet. It's pretty obvious it's susceptible to buffer overflow attacks, right? The get s C function does not check the length of the user input, and as a result, the user can overflow the allocated buffer. Doing so, he may override the return address in the current function frame in the stack, and when the function will return, the processor will be manipulated into executing the user-supplied code. Right, so the user has effectively changed the program and manipulated the original flow of the program. Buffer overflow is actually just one type of exploit in a more broad family of exploit called code injections. And these exploits, together with prominent members like format string attacks and heap overflow attacks, these exploits either inject external code into the program and manipulate the victim into executing it as if it was its own code, or they just subvert the victim into executing its own code in a timing it didn't intend to, right? So the effect is that the programs are manipulated and the flow is changed. The original flow of the program is changed. This problem we're trying to solve using Corset. Now, there's a myriad of defense techniques against such exploits, most of which are specifically tailored to the exploit themselves, and thus I'm not going to discuss them, but I do want to discuss is a more general defense technique called host-based intrusion detection system on which Corset is based. Well, it's pretty common and known. This system tries to detect anomalous behavior in the programs they're protecting. They're doing so by first pre-constructing a model which represents the normal behavior of the application they're protecting. And with that model in hand, they begin monitoring the running program, observing system data during the execution, comparing it to the model of normal behavior, and when a divergence is detected, they raise an alarm. Now, if an alarm is raised because of a legitimate piece of code in the program, we say that a false positive has happened. If we have high number of false positive, our security system is not really usable, but even if there's a small amount of false positive, it's a little problematic because the user cannot really help the system to decide whether an attack took place or not. So the user usually ends up either ignoring the security system or repeatedly terminating the legitimate piece of code he's trying to execute. The second parameter we'll be discussing is false negatives, and that happens when an attack goes unnoticed. Obviously, we want the number of false negatives to be as low as possible, and that's directly derived from the precision of our system. If it's precise enough, we'd get a low number of false negatives. So what are these models of normal behavior, really? I'll talk about two common methodologies of creating them. The first common one is the machine learning technique. We take an application we want to protect, we execute it in a black box environment, learn its behavior in a finite amount of time called the training period, and build the model of normal behavior from the observed behavior. And obviously, this technique is capable of detecting a wide range of attacks because everything that wasn't observed during the training period will later be considered as anomalous, and it doesn't really care about the exploit itself. And it's completely automated technique, so that's very useful. But the downside is its inherent statistical behavior. Obviously, a finite amount of time cannot really cover every execution path of the program. More precisely, the user cannot really know whether every execution path was observed, and as a result, no matter how good our machine learning technique is, we will always have an inherent false alarm problem. For example, let's take a look at this code snippet. It's very small and obvious. No matter how good our machine learning technique is, next year, this code will change its behavior. Most likely will produce a false negative, right? We can learn it in the next couple of months. It doesn't matter. Next year, its behavior is going to change, and a false positive will most likely be produced. So that's machine learning. Let's talk about the second common model creation technique. Very common, program policies. In this technique, the user or the author itself creates a program specification which explicitly states what is the program, what the program is allowed to do. Now, this spec can be highly accurate. Theoretically, it could be as accurate as the binary itself, and as a result, it could completely eliminate false alarms. And so that's really powerful property. But the downside of this technique is that it's pretty hard to write such an accurate spec and to keep it up to date as the program evolves. So by observing these two common methodologies, we really see two powerful properties which we are going to have in Corset. The first one is the automation property of the machine learning technique, which we really like. And the second one is the accuracy and the false positive elimination. We're going to have both of them in Corset. So now that we've covered the background, what's Corset really? Roughly speaking, Corset is divided into two primary subsystems. The left primary subsystem is the static analyzer. It dwells in the user space, and it's responsible for creating the model of normal behavior for the program we're trying to protect. In Corset, this model of normal behavior is a control flow graph. This control flow graph is statically created once for every application we want to protect. It's done beforehand during the compilation process of the program. And then, after being created, it is delivered to the second primary subsystem of Corset, which is the runtime monitor. This subsystem is part of the kernel. It uses this control flow graph and enforces it on the program in order to detect variation from the original flow that the program is supposed to do. Now let's get a little bit into the details. Let's assume this is a really important server we're trying to protect. Now don't try to read the code, it's nonsense, just for the example's sake. The first primary assumption that Corset takes is that attackers eventually really have to use a system call in order to harm the underlying system. So we know that this is not entirely true. For example, an mapped file can be altered by just writing into memory addresses, but all in all, it's a pretty solid assumption. We know shellcodes, they most commonly end up trying to issue a system call, like spawning a shell, execute or something. So based on that assumption, let's get back to our code. It's a very buttons they're very protecting. Let's get rid of the code that's really not relevant for the system call sequences out. Now let's get rid of the parameters. And now what we have left is really a concise description of the system call behavior that our server might issue. Now let's start creating the graph, the control flow graph for this program. Obviously, it begins with an open system call, so the root node of the graph would be an open node. And then through the else clause of the if, we're going to a write system call, which must eventually end up a close. Going through the other way of the if, there's a read system call. Note that the read node has a self edge because it is inside the body of a for clause. And just in case the body of the for statement doesn't even execute, our server may directly call close after it called open, so we really should add a direct edge from open to close, and that's it. This is the model of normal behavior. That's the control flow graph we'll be using to enforce the flow of our program. Now, note, and this is really important for Corsair, that every system call sequence that our server could issue is represented in a path in that graph, because we derive this graph directly from the source code of the server. And if we apply a simple logic negation to that sentence, we end up a conclusion that if there is no path in the graph for a certain system call sequence, that must mean that this sequence is invalid and should not be allowed. And armed with this conclusion, the kernel monitoring agent of CurlSet enforced the graph on the server. Now, let's say the user has executed our server. It's obviously executed in the user space. The graph, the model's normal behavior, is loaded into the kernel memory, and the monitoring agent starts to observe every system call that is emitted from the server. Now, let's see what happens. Let's say the first system call is the open system call. No problem. The monitor agent looks at the graph. The root node is an open system call. It matches the requested system call. And therefore, this node is marked as the current node of the graph. The system call is allowed and is executed. Everyone is happy. Next system call is the read one. The monitor agent takes a look. Notice that the current node is open. It begins scanning its outgoing edges, looking for a direct node that matches the requested system call. Fast enough, it finds the leftmost outgoing edge, which leads to the read node, matches the system call. The read node is now the new current node. It allows the read system call to be executed. Everyone is happy. Another system call is coming. Again, it's a read one. Again, monitor agent takes a look at the current node, scans its outgoing edges, find one that leads to a node that matches the requested system call. Mark that node as the new current node and allow the system call to happen. Accidentally, this is the same node as before, but that really doesn't matter. Now, let's assume that in the latter read system call, the user has injected code into our server and succeeded to manipulate it into executing it. Let's say our user is trying to spawn a shell. So now our monitoring agent observes an execve system call coming from our server. Just like before, it takes the current node, it begins scanning its outgoing edges, looking for one that matches the new system call. But this time, it cannot find the matching node. And armed with the conclusion I've mentioned before, which it kills the application because there is really no other explanation in this divergence from the model than an attack, code injection attack. And the process is terminated in order to prevent the attacker to inflict damage. So this is the concept Corset is based on. We call it code-based intrusion detection. The concept is not new. It's been floating in academic circles in the past few years. First work was published by David Wagner and Drew Dean a few years back. It was called Intrusion Detection via Static Analysis. It's an interesting read if anyone is interested in the subject. The advantages of this model are as follows. Firstly, it's completely automated. No user intervention is required. And secondly, there is a provable zero false positive property. And that's because that means that every time a monitoring agent will raise an alarm and terminate the process, it will be justified. Why is it correct? As we've said and seen, the control flow graph is directly derived from the program itself, right? From the source code. So every sequence of system call that does not match our graph cannot have been issued by the original program. So it's completely justified to terminate the program and raise an alarm. There's absolutely no other explanation than a code injection attack. Now there's a subtle assumption here that the code we're protecting does not modify itself during execution. Because if the code does modify itself, any statically pre-constructed model will probably not match the dynamically changing code. So Corset really cannot protect programs like Skype, but we're not really worried because for most practical scenarios, servers we're trying to protect do not really change themselves during execution. The disadvantages of this technique are, first off, it's limited to code injection attacks. It will not stop misconfiguration problems or logic errors in the code of the program we're protecting. And it's pretty hard to achieve high precision with a low runtime overhead cost, and we'll soon get to it. Now, I think it's time for small demo. Just like make sure. Okay. What we have here is a full-blown Ubuntu Hardy system, and I've prepared beforehand a small friendly server, let's say. Pretty small C code. It takes the first command line argument. It treats it as a file name. It opens the file, and up there, it reads the file content, prints it to screen, and as you can see, he's really keen into getting a payload, and he's willing to read much more than he was willing to allocate. The buffer, which intend to contain the user input, is a little bit smaller than the amount of user input that our friendly code is willing to get. So just let's make sure it works with simple files. No problem. Very keen on getting a payload, and we have something for him, but before feeding him the pill, let's see what we got here. It's a really, really small, simple shell code. Begins with lots of NOPs, ends with lots of addresses. Hopefully, that will point to one of those NOPs. And in the middle, we got a very simple x86-64 shell code that does nothing really but trying to spawn a shell. So, very simple classroom shell code. And by feeding our keen friend with this payload, we hopefully get a root shell. Yes, it worked. as you can see, the friendly code did read the file, print it to screen, and when the read function returned, the processor was manipulated into running our code, ending up a root shell, which was spawned. Sorry, square root. We're still the same nice user, but with an effective user ID of root. But that was really only possible because parset runtime monitoring was disabled. Now let's do it again. But first, let's enable parset runtime monitoring. Now, this time when we'll execute the code, the kernel will notice that there is a very similar file called payloadfriend.corset, and that file is actually the control flow graph of the software. And the graph will be loaded into kernel memory and will be enforced on our server. So hopefully any control flow manipulation on this piece of code will be stopped. Now let's just make sure it's still working with simple examples. No problem. Still keen on getting a payload. No noticeable overhead degradation, runtime degradation. Now let's feed it the shellcode. And boom, it was killed. I mean, we could see that it read the shellcode, it printed it to screen, and once the read function returned, the processor was still manipulated into executing our shellcode, but this time a system call, an execve system call was requested, and that system call was not part of the original flow of the program, therefore Corset killed our server. Now let's take a look what happened really inside the kernel. You can see there's a bunch of system calls that were requested and approved. It's not that important, but the last two lines, we can see a request for system call 59 in x86-64, that's execve system call. And the last line really is the one that Corset telling us it's killing the code because of an illegal system call. So that works. One point I would like to note, stress, is that in nowadays modern operating system, buffer overflow are not that easy to exploit. I mean, just to demonstrate this simple classroom shellcode, I had to take down several shields, like disabling the NX protection of my laptop, which makes me extremely nervous. I'm very eager to turn it on. As soon as the presentation will finish, I had to take down the stack protection, the canary, which is enabled by default in Ubuntu Hardy, and I had to stop the address randomization that Ubuntu has by default. So buffer overflow are not that easy today to exploit, but Corset is not really about buffer overflows. I use it just because it's easy to understand, easy to write, but Corset is about anything that might manipulate and change the original flow of the program, whether it's buffer overflow or any other code injection attack we know or might not even yet know. So, and that's the strength of this methodology. Now that we've seen an example and know the general idea, let's delve into the details. There are a few complexities in the code-based intrusion detection concept, and one of them involves functions. Well, we haven't really talked about functions. That's not really a problem. Let's take a look. On the right, there's a control flow graph for a function, simple function called foo. On the left, there's a code fragment with the calling node for that function. Now, in order to get the final graph that describes or represents the system call sequence of this code, we really must link those graphs. So it's pretty simple and straightforward. We just link the calling node to the entry node of the function graph and link the exit node of the function graph back to the original descendant of the Connolly node. So that's pretty easy to understand and to implement. Now that we linked them, we can get rid of the calling node, get rid of the exit and entry node of the function. We do so using a simplification process that gets rid of every node that is irrelevant to CoreSet, and the end result is very simple to enforce and represent every possible sequence of system call that the code could emit. And now the simplification process we're using in a more general case looks like that. Let's say V is a node we're not interested in, we just get rid of it, and we need to connect every ancestor to every descendant in order to preserve every sequence of system call that this code might issue. So what's the problem really with functions? Let's see a bit more complex scenario. Still the same function, but now we have two code fragments that call our function. Well, let's link it just exactly what we've done before, linking every call node to the beginning of the function and the exit of the function to the original descendant. It's pretty simple. But there's a subtle problem here that this graph will allow a sequence of system call that is not really passable in the original code, right? For example, a sequence of system call beginning in the open system call, going through read and ending at a write system call will be allowed in this graph, and naturally it cannot be requested by the original code. So multi-linking to the same instance of the function graph really adds some impassable path, which results in reduction of the precision and might potentially add false negatives. And an attacker in the read node does have now a bigger variety of system call to choose from, right? You can choose either the close or the write, while the original code will always have one passable option. So that's an impassable path we have just added. How do we mitigate this phenomenon? We first check what is the destination function, or more precisely, what is the destination function doing? If that function does not issue any system call, for example, string copy, very popular function, does not issue any system call, we couldn't really care about this function in CoreSet because it doesn't change the sequence of system calls. So linking to it doesn't do anything but adding impassable path. So before linking, we check the function, we verify it issues a system call. If it does not, we just don't link it, and instead we get rid of its calling nodes. And as a result, we get very simple graph, still represent every possible system call sequence, no impassable path introduced. But that was valid for functions that did not issue system call. What about functions that do issue system calls, for example, here? And our approach here is called graph inlining. It's something that really resembles what's going on in compilers. Instead of linking the calling nodes to this single instance of a function, we really create private copies of this function for every calling node in our program. And now we link the calling node to the private clones of the destination graphs. After link, we can yet again get rid of the calling node themselves and the entry and exit nodes using our simplification process. And the end result is it's nice, it's simple, it still represents every possible sequence of system call and no impassable path. That was a function that directly issued system calls. What about functions that call other functions that issue system calls, or maybe more nested scenarios? Obviously, adding and inlining a deeper nesting level of function will increase our precision, but there's the obvious cost of space, our graph will be bigger. Currently in CrossSet, we only inline the simplest depth of one. The next challenge of code-based intrusion detection is illustrated in this slide. Let's take a look at the code to the left. It begins with a read system call, and then there are two options, each of which begins with the same system call, the write system call, and then it continues differently. Now on the right, we can see the graph, the corresponding graph. The monitoring agent, when it observes a write system call, it must decide whether it should go to the left branch or to the right one. And that's not that easy. Without deciding, it cannot know what is the next current node, and it cannot continue protecting the code. A naive solution might suggest using the program counter of the code, but that doesn't really work. Let's see why. On the left, there's a simple C code, two identical system calls, right system code. But these are actually function calls to the C library, right? So not really system calls. The C library itself is the one who asks the kernel to execute the system call, and our monitoring agent from within the kernel will see both of the write requests as if, and they are, coming from the exact same location, from within the C library, and they will carry the same address, same program counter. So we can't really use the address of the instruction to differentiate between them. What we do in CrossSet, instead of trying to know which of the branch is the correct one, we just merge those non-deterministic nodes into a single instance. As you can see, the resulting graph still represents every possible system call sequence in the code. That's nice, but there's a subtle problem with it. Let's look at the more general problem. On the left, again, a graph with a non-determinism problem. On the right, the same graph after the non-deterministic nodes have been merged. Now, obviously, every possible sequence of system calls in the left graph is still represented in the right graph, but now, after merging, we see that some additional new sequences have been introduced. For example, a sequence of O, R, Y is now being allowed in the right graph, and that's really an impassable path, which was just introduced, and it might allow the attacker, gives the attacker a bigger variety of system call to choose from, and might potentially end in the false negative. So that really solved the problem, but introduced something else. And to solve that, there's a solution which is just in the works now. Again, on the left, you can see the graph with the problem, and on the right is the new solution. Instead of merging those nodes, we just add a new one, which aims just to solve the non-deterministic problem for that specific location, and otherwise we do not change the graph. And the new graph still represents every possible sequence of system call, but no impassable path has been introduced, so the precision is still high. As a result of these manipulations, we get a graph which we call the deterministic call graph automaton. Every node is a system call. There are no non-deterministic problems. And we always know a single node as the current node. As a result, the time complexity of our monitoring is linearly bounded with the number of different system calls our underlying operating system has, and in Linux, in modern kernels, it's about 300 system calls. The space complexity is quite kind of nice as well. Besides loading the graph, we only have to maintain a single node, which is the current node. So that's nice. Now let's get into business and see how this is all implemented. Again, you probably recall two primary models, the left one, static analyzer, responsible for creating the graphs, it's in the user space, deliver those graphs to the runtime monitor in the kernel space. the runtime monitoring agent, which lives in the kernel space, works as follows. Every time a program is executed, now the kernel will also look for the corresponding graph. If one is found, it will be loaded into the kernel memory, and now the monitoring will begin. Every system call will be observed and simulated on the graph. If it matches the graph, the system call request will be forwarded to the kernel's original system call handler, otherwise the program is terminated. The graph itself and the current node are maintained in the process descriptor of the program you're protecting. In Linux, it's called taskstruct. It's pretty simple. And the monitoring is hooked into the system call handler itself of the kernel. We've added a new LSM. LSM stands for Linux Security Module hook. We add a hook called the security system call. It's right into the system call handler. It takes the system call itself. It takes the address of the program descriptor. In Linux, it's called the thread info. And it returns an answer whether to allow or not the system call itself. If the system call is allowed, you can see down there that this specific system call handler is called. So that's pretty simple. To use it, it's even simpler. All the user needs to do is to start the runtime monitor, and whenever program will be executed, if there's a graph, it will be loaded and the program will be protected. This is how we stop it. It's very simple. I've discussed most of these points. Maybe the last two points, I'll shortly describe them because they will be important later. A monitoring agent can dynamically update and optimize this control flow graph in memory during execution of the program. What it does is every time a system call is matched to an outgoing edge, the outgoing edge is moved to the front of the list of outgoing edges. So after a few iterations, the more popular system calls, their corresponding outgoing edges will be located in the beginning of the list. As a result, the runtime overhead will be minimal and the performance of the program will be much better. The last point is that this updated graph can be dumped back to disk, so subsequent execution of the same program will enjoy previous optimization of the graph. So that was the kernel monitoring monitor agent. Now let's take a look at the static analyzer. How does it really work? As we said, every time we compile a program, the static analyzer transparently creates the graph. It's part of the compilation process. And besides the original product of the compilation, we also get the graph. This is done transparently without any user intervention and without the system knowing about it. The compilation itself is not changed. It is done by wrapping the Linux build tools so we can monitor every compilation action so that every file that is compiled or assembled, linked, or every static library that is being created, we get the corresponding graph. Well, there's a limitation currently in Cosette. We only support static libraries. That's a big limit. Usage of the static analyzer, it's very simple. All the user has to do is just start it. And now feel free to compile, to assemble, to create a static library or link a final executable, and as a result, the user will get the graph. This is the graph for the static library. It's really a collection of graphs, each of which corresponds to a different object in the library, and this is the binary graph of the final executable, ready to be loaded into the kernel. Had enough of those graphs being produced, the user can stop the static analyzer and the system behavior is back to normal. Okay, that's nice, but how we really construct these control flow graphs? Well, it's pretty hard to construct an accurate graph that presents the final executable. Fortunately, we do not have to do that. We have GCC. Let's see briefly see how GCC works. It has a front end. The front end understands the programming language of the file we are compiling. It converts, it parses the file and converts it into an intermediate representation and hands it to the middle end. The middle end takes this intermediate representation called the RTL, Register Transfer Language. It's kind of an assembly language, describes in great detail what the program is doing. The middle end is performing most of the optimizations that GCC does, and when it finishes, it handles the result to the back end, which is responsible of generating the platform-specific code. So that's nice, but how really does that help us? Well, the middle end creates and rigorously maintains a control flow graph for every file that it compiles. So all we really have to do is hook into GCC, take this control flow graph directly from its internal data, and go ahead with it. So that seems like a perfect use case for GCC plugins. Only problem is that they don't exist. So fortunately, we have those parameters that we can nicely ask GCC to dump the control flow graph of the application is compiling. It is dumped in a format called VCG, Visualization of Compiler Graphs. It's a text file, pretty easy to understand. There's the nodes and edges. Every node has its instruction. Again, it's the RTL representation. It's very detailed. And this is an example of a simple C code. User compiles it. Since we wrapped the Linux build tools, we can add those parameters, and as a result, besides the obvious object file, we also get the control flow graph dumped to disk. It's very detailed, as you can see, although the code is very simple because that's more like a machine language. All we have to do is get back to our simplification process, get rid of every node that doesn't add us information, and as a result, the result is pretty simple. We only get what may affect us. And so that's nice. It works really good for C files. Describes the behavior in accurate manner. But what about assembly files? I mean, when we write C code, we don't really use system calls, right? We use function calls into the C library. And the C library itself extensively uses assembly files in order to implement most of the system calls, so we really need to be able to create those graphs for assembly files as well. Let's take a look at one example of the C library. This file implements the read C function. It's heavily loaded with macros. We don't really want to parse these macros, so instead we just disassemble the resulting object file. We look for system calls, we look for function calls, we take the function destination from the relocation entries, and we build a simple graph, group together the system calls and the function calls. It's a sound graph. I mean, it represents every possible sequence of system call that the original code may request, but it's too crude. It introduces impassable path, but to improve that, we really need a better data and control flow analysis of assembly code, and we currently don't have, so this is the solution we have. Another compilation unit that GCC supports is straight for standard input. GCC supports compiling code that doesn't have a representation on disk. That may seem redundant to support, but glibc kind of likes it. Extensively use compilation methods like the one that is illustrated, directly echoed into GCC, and we must support it, so we do something like we do with assembly file. Disassemble the object code and build the same graph that correspond to the functions which are found in the object code. That's not enough, really. Lots of program, and glibc in particular, use symbol aliases. They have, for example, here, they have only one function, the underscore libc underscore read, but in addition, they have two symbol aliases. The read function itself, it's only an alias. So effectively, they add functions that doesn't have code in the object file. To solve that, we parse the symbol table. We look for symbols that reside in the same code section and begin at the same address. And for those symbols, we know they correspond to the same code. We just add new entry nodes to the graph, and now we have graph for every function. Last implementation issue regards linking. As we said, we link calling nodes to the destination graphs. It's pretty simple, but really, in order to accurately describe the executable, we must consider linking semantics like local and global symbols, weak symbols that have stronger symbols with the same name must be ignored, and therefore we take the stronger graphs. And we can define calling nodes that does not have destination graph. In such cases, we do not fail the process. Instead, we dynamically add an empty graph, just like a linker will do. Let's see some performance evaluation of Corset. We've done some micro benchmarks to measure the runtime overhead. We measured several different system calls of varying speed. The leftmost system call is the write system call. It's the slowest. Then comes the read, write to dev null, and set user ID, it's the fastest. First, we can obviously see that the overhead here is represented in percentage of overhead. So the slowest system call has a lower percentage, that's obvious, while the fastest has a bigger overhead percentage. But now let's take a look at the different bars. The leftmost bar, the blue one, is the best case. That's when the requested system call is the first outgoing edge. It's the fastest monitoring. And as you can see, the overhead is negligible in those cases. It's around 1%. Next comes the purple bar. It's a bad case. That's when the requested system call is the 50th outgoing edge. The monitoring agent has to scan through 50 edges until it finds a solution. That overhead is a little more noticeable. And the last one is really a theoretical worst case. That's when we have a different outgoing edge for every different system call in the underlying system. Again, in Linux 2.6.23, it was about 300. And that overhead is really, really bad. But that's only micro benchmark. Let's look at overall benchmarks for several applications. We took several ubiquitous Unix applications that we all know and love, the CPLS and CAT. We built the graphs using the static analyzer and measured the overhead percentage incurred by Corset while they run. It seemed that the result is not that bad. It's around 1%. And it's somewhat similar to the best case in the micro benchmark. This has two explanations. First, applications sometimes actually execute code in user space. They don't always execute system code. So the micro benchmark is really an upper bound of the overhead. The next explanation is that the monitoring agent update the graph dynamically and optimize it. So really after a few iterations, we really get something like the best case. Let's talk a bit about precision. We use the branching factor as a precision measure. That's the average number of outgoing edges in a graph. If that number is high, an attacker has a variety of system code to choose from when he's trying to take down a system. So we really want that one to be low. And this is a few measurements from few ubiquitous glibc code Just notice the rightmost bar, the yellow one, is the final code. Maybe more interesting is an empty main function that has a noticeable branching factor, which we'll soon see why. For illustration, this is the graph for malloc, which was automatically created. This is fwrite, not as simple and small. And now let's talk about an empty synth program. And naively, one may expect the graph of an empty C program to be very small, even empty. But when compiling that one into a final executable, the C library really adds a large deal of code, both before this function and after this function. So when just in order to get that function to run, there's a large deal of code going on behind the scenes. And this is the graph that was produced by the that was automatically produced. Takes time. And I stopped fighting it into the slide. I mean, just a part of it. So it's not that as simple as one would expect. In summary, CrossSet, it's code-based intrusion detection, zero false positive, negligible overhead. It's only implemented to Linux currently. Capable of doing automatic analysis of glibc. It's free software license under the GPL license. You can all download, improve, send patches. But remember, it's still a proof of concept. It's pretty limited. Maybe the most noticeable limit is that it supports only static linking. This is the website. The updated presentation is located there. The code is located there. Feel free to download. Thank you very much for the time and attention. That's it. Any questions?
Yeah, question. How do you handle interrupts?
You mean signals?
Yeah.
But interrupts has nothing to do with user space, but signals we currently do not handle. Signals, there's a way to solve. There's two steps way to implement it. We first have to detect the signal handlers, and once we did that, we need to allow them into the graph. We can do that by matching an edge into those handlers from every node in the graph, which looks a bit cumbersome. But we can also improve the dynamic monitoring and add those edges only when a signal is delivered. Yes, please.
Yeah, so it seems like a sufficiently complex program, like one that has a general event handler, would have an extremely permissive control flow graph. Do you have any sense as to, that would allow an attacker to mimic the profile of the legitimate application while still performing bad deeds. Do you have any sense as to how permissive, something like an Apache server really is?
Right. So you're talking about an attacker trying to mimic the normal behavior into delivering an attack, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if say, everybody used this, then as an attacker, what I would want to do is ensure that my attack performed what I wanted it to do while still maintaining a system call flow that the application would have normally used.
Right. So there's a few approaches to mitigate this attack. It cannot be completely removed. Firstly, obviously we can improve the precision of the model, which will lead to a reduction in the average branching factor. This will lead to a minimal variety of system call an attacker can choose from to conduct an attack. Secondly, we can add more system data, like we can check the parameters of the system call themselves. Some of them might even be easier to detect. Some might have to do data flow analysis, but this is also possible to add.
And then, can you comment on why you don't use non-deterministic automata?
Yep. Using a non-deterministic automata was there's quite a deal of research and it always ends up in excessive overhead latencies. Excessive runtime overhead that really renders this method unpractical. You can get something like hundreds or thousands of percentage of overhead. So we really want to be as deterministic as possible.
Hopefully I didn't misunderstand anything, but when the actual attacker is using code that's already actually... when they're using, for instance, like a stack flow that was already implemented into the application, so it's an actual instruction that the application is supposed to do, how is this going to determine that it's not an instruction that the application is not going to do or is not supposed to do? For instance, if the user or if the attacker is using, let's say, I don't know if you're familiar with, yesterday they were talking about intrusion without injection, and would this be able to detect that from a normal application?
Okay, the basic idea in CrossSet is that we treat the binary or the source code as a contract between the author and the system. This is what the program should be allowed to do. And in those attacks, the attacker really subvert this contract and manipulate it into a flow which is not really passable in the source code. It indeed uses code from the program itself, but in a timing that is not passable from reading the code. So it will not be represented in the control flow graph that is constructed, and it will be stopped. Yes, sir.
Hi. So we've seen that just for a very basic program, the control flow diagram is really big. So I'm wondering if you add exception handling and like polymorphism in C++, like doesn't that cause the graph to like grow exponentially and become unmanageable?
First, I would like to stress that this graph is a result of a system which is still in infantry, like it's still a proof of concept. When the precision will be increased, it will grow simpler. Now about C++, C++ has problematic properties like vtables and indirect calls. Indirect calls can only be resolved in dynamically during runtime. Obviously, a static approach cannot tell that beforehand, but there are solutions. If we will take better data flow analysis, we could tell where even an indirect call could lead, and we could add an edge to those potential function destinations. Now, there's a few approaches. We can, for example, a naive approach will add an edge from every indirect call to every function in the program. As you said, this will easily lead to a graph which is, I'm not sure if exponential is the right word, but it will be more like a click, and that will render it useless. But as the measure will grow better and more sophisticated, the data flow analysis will be more sophisticated, we will end up with a much better precision and a lower branching factor, and the graph will be simpler and effective.
I'm curious how concurrent execution fits into your model in both developing the graph and being able to actually trace system calls that you may not know exactly what order they might occur in.
Okay, so concurrent execution really have a few threads of execution, each of which should have its own current node in the graph. They might have the same control flow graph, but each of them will have a different current node in the graph. And that's really not the problem. When a thread of execution will request a system call, that system call will be matched again the same graph, but from a different current node, which will reflect the position of that thread of execution. Okay. Any other question? Thank you very much for your time.